Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Stacking them deep, selling them cheap.
It tastes like gasoline, rubber, and victory.
We're just out here stacking packs.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Stacking Pennies in studio. He has joined us via Zoom before, but first time he has set foot on the Stacking Pennies set. The guy, the brainchild of the NASCAR schedule and many other things, Ben Kennedy, joining us.
Cool.
Golf clap.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate
for coming.
It. Good to finally be here in person.
Absolutely. You're the man of the hour. Everybody wants to talk to you. You have the big awaited schedule. Got pushed back a couple weeks. There was a lot of chatter, a lot of chirping. What's changing? What's moving? We going to Mexico. We going to Canada. Who knows? And we're going to Iowa. How many?
My passport updated and everything.
I did too. Yeah, you owe me that $75.
Always have your passport ready. You never know where you're going to go.
We'll get to that in a second. I'm sitting here holding a spreadsheet of the schedule. How tired are you looking at this?
So the morning after we release the schedule, and I do this every year. I mean, as soon as we start working on the schedule, which is 6 months in advance, is when we start to place, you know, dates in boxes. I have my Excel sheet up. I have my Excel sheet up and one or two other documents. And it always feels so good that next morning to hit the red X afterwards. I'm like, I'm not seeing the schedule again. So we went through 24 different variations on the schedule this year. We landed on 24B, so we play with different scenarios too. And that was our last version. So we did a lot better than 2020, which I think we ended up with 85 versions.
Sheesh. Well, we were racing Wednesdays. We were just racing all we can do to get all the races backfilled before Phoenix.
Wednesdays, doubleheaders, all that stuff.
I can't even imagine the amount of phone calls went into that. Man, you guys have worked tirelessly. We can talk about the end and then kind of work backwards. Is there like a moment where somebody is like, yeah, pull a trigger on that? Or like, is there a panel? Like, thumbs up, we good? Looking around, everybody? Any reservations? Okay, good. And then like you hit the big red button and go, how does that work?
Yeah, so it's I would say the red button never really gets hit until we officially send the schedule out every year. So, you know, and I was talking with some people that were hearing about some of the rumors around the 24 schedule leading into it. And right, like we're going through different variations, we're playing out different scenarios, and we have a group of, I would say about give or take one or two people, a dozen people that get together on a weekly basis that are talking through the schedule. So we have folks represented from competition, from broadcast, from international, from strategy, a handful of different folks that will get together and talk about everything related to the schedule. So, you know, broadcast will weigh in as it relates to network windows and start times. Competition will weigh in, you know, as you think about moving from track to track. So this is something that we think about a lot. And something that someone asked me last week is, well, why would you not have a midweek race in between these two dates? And in order to have a midweek race, it's really tough to come to Sonoma to, even if it is a Martinsville or Richmond on a Wednesday, especially if you start to consider weather and all of those things. So competition will weigh in. We'll have our international folks weigh in. We'll have our strategy folks weigh in. So we really kind of have a core group that starts to set the foundation for the schedule. And then from there, we'll have different parties that will break out that are focused on the execution of it. So you had Julie Giese here that talked about the Chicago Street Course, put together a team in Chicago that's now executing that event. The team in Los Angeles is focused on the Coliseum. So what started as a small group of 7 or 8 people in the summer of 2019 has now expanded into a handful of different folks. Not perfect yet, but we're learning a lot and going to continue to iterate on it as we keep going.
Do you ever look at a farmer's almanac?
Occasionally, yeah. We look at that every now and then. I mean, you start to think about whether it's a big factor in our schedule, right? Different times of year, when we're racing, where we're racing, all of those things.
Can we not go back to Texas when it's 400 degrees?
Well, it's moving to the spring next
year. My man, appreciate
that. It is moving
to
the spring next year.
Got your wish.
Yep. Yes.
We got your wish.
Yes.
So we actually... We've partnered up with the weather company in the past and IBM. So they have all sorts of data that we can look at as we start to think about weather, forecast, time of year. I think the tricky part of this, right, is especially you start to think about February and March and then October and November. There's only a handful of warm weather tracks that we can realistically go to. It's Daytona, it's Homestead, it's Phoenix. Even Vegas is a bit of a mixed bag every now and then. Atlanta can be a mixed bag. So you start to think about February, March. It is difficult to find a lot of warm weather dates, especially when we get to that part of the schedule.
But speaking of Atlanta, Ben, that second race, did Atlanta, what puzzle piece? Was that last? Was it first? Like, because I feel like the second race you could argue is maybe one of the most important because you have such a massive audience for the 500. And how do you carry them over? I'm guessing you want to give fans the greatest product that you put on. Do you do something vastly different? Seems like we're doing something kind of similar in a super speedway kind of intermediate hybrid. Talk to me about Atlanta and how you kind of chose that as the second race.
Yeah, so Atlanta, we discussed for a long time. There were half a dozen tracks that we talked about being in that second slot. So your point, it's a really important part on the schedule. So you go from the Clash to Daytona 500, highest rated, highest viewed, most attended event of the year to Atlanta. You have a lot of people that are just naturally carrying over into the first part of the season. So felt like it was important to have a racetrack that frankly puts on an exciting race, a compelling racing product. Now that we've been able to see it out with the reconfiguration and repave for the past couple of years, that was a consideration. Weather was another consideration. Sure, a little bit colder in late February, but we've also had Atlanta in the second slot for about 5 or 6 years, you know, from 2015, I think, through 2019. So there are a handful of things that we talked about. You know, part of that also, you know, continuing to have Vegas and Phoenix in the third and fourth slots, a lot of date equity around those two races in particular. So there were a handful of things as we talked about Atlanta. And, you know, I'll be honest, we looked at a ton of different options going into that second slot. And just naturally, Atlanta made the most sense, all things considered.
It's one of his best tracks, so I'm sure you're happy about it. Lock you into the playoffs early.
I would love that. I would love that. And then it's in the first round of the playoffs, too, so we might mess around and be able to go on to the round of 12. Who knows? A lot of chatter. I personally like Daytona being the last regular season race of the year. I feel like it gave the sport a lot of unknowns, a little bit of a wild card to finish the season. How much talk went into that decision, making Darlington the regular season finale?
A lot of talk. So we debated that for a really long time because, you know, we did make a pretty bold move a few years ago and moved it off of the July 4th weekend, right? Talk about date equity. Daytona on July 4th, in a lot of ways, was synonymous with each other. So moving it to the end of the regular season was a huge shift for us. And, you know, I think after we've seen that shift play out for a few years, it's something we debated for a really long time. We have the two Olympic off weeks. Do you do a midweek race? Do you do a doubleheader? Or do you shift the tail end of your season back 1 week, which we ended up deciding to do? And, you know, as we said last week and when we announced the schedule, this isn't a forever thing. This is something we're going to test out for 1 year, see how it goes, continue to learn. Candidly, I wouldn't be surprised if Daytona went back to the regular season cutoff, especially after the past few years. It's exciting. It's unpredictable. Anytime you have a lot of those values that come out of a race, our fans tend to enjoy it. In the last race of the regular season, I mean, anyone can win that race and punch their ticket to the playoffs. So that's really exciting. That said, I am looking forward to seeing what Darlington's going to look like on Labor Day weekend. You know, that's something we talked about too. Do you swap Darlington and Daytona and have Daytona on Labor Day weekend? Feel like there's a lot of value and a lot of history and tradition of Darlington and that 500-mile race on that weekend. So that was another part of us talking about it. So again, just because it's part of the 24 schedule doesn't mean it's going to be on the 25 schedule, but it is something we wanted to test out and see how it does.
Everything's up to change.
Yeah.
He's had a talking point whenever we bring up schedule talk. He says there's only four tracks on the schedule. How many numbers?
I would like, so I had this conversation with Chip Weil, who's president of tracks, right?
And right.
At kickball, which we lost this week, sticking point, but we'll get over that. I asked him, I said, man, I've always kind of been on the fence of two Daytonas, two Talladegas, two Martinsvilles. And like, I'd be good going everywhere else once just from a guy on pit road's standpoint of crowd and kind of the vibe you get when you go to a new track or only go somewhere once.
So you like two Daytonas? And two
I like two Daytonas, two Talladegas, okay. and two Martinsvilles. Everywhere else I can do single once.
Okay.
He said, well, where the hell do you want to go? And that's a great point, right? So I was like, yeah, that's a good point. Like
Kentucky.
Like, and he had rebuttals for Kentucky. But then I was wondering, like, there's not a lot of places you can go in the country because there's just so many. Like, we've come so far with safety since, like, I brought up, like, a Pikes Peak. Like, is Pikes Peak even still there? How many different tracks? Now we've crossed the bridge where you can create tracks, right, in the city, like Chicago. How many do you keep your finger on the pulse of, like, what short tracks would we be able to go to? What has the capacity seating-wise? Like, what do you look at around the country there?
Yeah, so there's a number of things we try to look at. And in a perfect world, if we could go and race at any racetrack that exists out there tomorrow, you know, we would have already made a lot of those changes. So you hit on some of them. You know, we look at capacity, we look at fan experience, we look at amenities. And then a really big important part of it is, what does track safety look like? So, you know, do we have safer walls? Is the foam updated in the safer walls? Do we have the right guardrails and fencing? And that's not a small capital expense as you think about moving our Cup Series to different tracks. So, you know, a lot of times as we think about looking at these new venues, frankly, they're tracks that we've either raced at in the past. That might be a track that Formula One races at, like Circuit of the Americas, or we go down this path that we've done in Los Angeles and Chicago of creating temporary tracks. Now, we've been very candid, and I believe this, that, you know, if we're going to have a stadium race and a street circuit type of racing on the schedule, it's never going to be a majority of the schedule. It's probably never going to be a bulk of the schedule, but is there a place where you could have one or two or maybe three of those types of tracks where you're going into new and novel markets in a downtown location, literally bringing NASCAR racing to not only our fans, but a lot of people that haven't been to a NASCAR race before? Yeah. I think that's an opportunity to talk about the temporary tracks. From a permanent standpoint, I do think it is a bit tricky because, you know, are there tracks that we could go out there? Absolutely. You know, we got to think about the location. We have to think about the market. And then really importantly, we have to make sure it's safe. And then anyone that's coming to the track, that they have a good fan experience. And you think about the level of amenities that people expected 20 years ago, looks entirely different today, right? Now you want to come to the track, you want to be able to connect to your Wi-Fi, you want to be able to park close to the track. So just the overall fan experience has evolved as we think about that.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Do your pennies stretch as far as they used to? Most likely it doesn't. Here's why. It took 200 years for the U.S. to print its first $5 trillion. Today, Washington has done that in just 3 years. The problem, every new dollar makes each one of your dollars worth less, robbing you and every other hardworking American. But you can stop this cycle of robbery by diversifying your IRA or 401k into gold, an asset that has stood the test of time. Our new sponsor, Birch Gold Group, has helped tens of thousands of Americans protect their retirement savings with physical precious metals. Now you can too. Get a free info kit on gold right now by texting the word Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, to 989-898. With an A-plus rating with the BBB, you're in good hands with Birch Gold. So get your free info kit by texting Corey to the number 989-898. Go check them out. Put some pennies in some gold. There's an unbelievable amount of list of things you have to consider when you're setting the locations, but also the order of the events. Mm-hmm. There's also the competition aspect that you have to take in consideration too. Is there like a mix? There was a little bit of chatter over the last couple of years that we got really heavy on road courses. I believe there were 7 on the schedule last year, the year before that. Is there a balance of speedway races, short track races, road course races that you guys try to keep within a couple numbers?
Well, it's interesting too, and it'd be good to get your guys' thoughts on this. I feel like if you go back to Gen 6 car, what we heard was short tracks and road courses. Short tracks number one, and then road courses is pretty high up there. And now it almost seems like the cards flipped a little bit with the next gen car, that it's starting to trend more towards the intermediate tracks. Still here, short tracks, maybe a little bit less road courses, but intermediate tracks. So, you know, that's something we try to keep the pulse on as much as we can. You know, can we go to more short tracks? Sure, there's a handful that we can go to.
Where? Like where?
There's
hypothetically.
Would Kern County be a potential option out there in Bakersfield?
So I would say anything could be a potential option. Again, it comes down to the quality of facility, the location, the market, time of year, all of those things. I do think there are short tracks that we're not at today that we could realistically go to. I also think we need to weigh out, like, all right, if we're going to pick on Kern County, if we're going to Kern County and, you know, we're going to get it up to Cup standards and make it truly feel like a Cup race, how do we make sure that that's sustainable too? Because it's really difficult to bite off a one-year deal relative to creating something that has a longer-term horizon on it. So, you know, that's something that we think about, you know, quite a bit. We got Iowa that comes on the schedule, a bit of a mix of, I would almost say, it's technically a short track, feels a little bit like intermediate too. But something we've been hearing a lot is, you know, adding more intermediates to the schedule. We've heard road courses in the past. You know, I would say there's more road courses that we can go to than any other type of track, but it's something that we debate quite a bit is, hey, what's the saturation level on these different types of tracks?
I hadn't heard that. I think you have 5. To sign a
My personal preference.
5 road
5.
Courses?
5 road courses.
Yep. And I think judging by the group drivers only group meet, that's about the number that, I mean, you got some guys in there. McDowell's like, I think we should run 15 road courses.
Well,
The driver's chat.
Can't listen. You're getting paid to be there.
Yeah.
Right? You got to worry about the people that are paying to be there. But how much do you guys say that Charlotte's been a big sticking point on the schedule with a lot of guys? I think Gluck's been pretty outspoken about him wanting that to go back to the Oval. We're seeing Indy go back to the Oval. How much of that is dictated by you, and how much of that is dictated by the ownership of the racetrack?
I would say it's a collaboration between the two of us. Indianapolis, we've been talking with Doug and the team about that for quite a while now, actually. So we had the road course there for a few years. Part of the decision behind going back to the Oval is, A, fans wanted to have the Oval. A lot of our stakeholders wanted to go back to Oval. But what better way to marry that up than the 30th anniversary of the Brickyard 400?
Yeah.
So the timing made a lot of sense around that. The Roval, personally, I don't feel like there's been a ton of conversation around the Roval until very recently, and that has sprouted up. So I would say as we think about Roval versus Oval or Indy Oval versus Indy Road Course, a lot of that comes back to, hey, what is in the best interest of the sport as we think about both, you know, driving interest for our existing fan base and catering to new fans, but also, you know, it's a collaboration and partnership with a lot of our track promoters too. So a lot of things away out there. And, you know, I think the tricky part about it is anytime you bring up a topic like that, there's no like clear answer. I mean, some people love, you know, the Charlotte Oval, some people love the Charlotte Roval. So we have to weigh out every constituent, every person that's, you know, leaning in on some of these decisions and then try to make a decision that's in the best interest of the sport.
I hadn't heard that it was difficult, but it makes sense now that you talk about signing multi-year agreements versus one-offs. Why are tracks not interested in a one-year? Can you not just say, hey, we're going to come see you in 25 and then maybe circle back a couple years down the road? That's not how it works.
I would say each one is a little bit different. I do think it's tricky, right? Like if you say you're bringing the Cup Series as an example to X racetrack and we need all these improvements, we need, you know, you to add safer barriers and fencing and, you know, garage stalls, infield care center, media. I mean, there is a long laundry list of things. I think it's more difficult to justify that to be able to say, hey, this is a one-year deal.
That makes sense.
So I think that is a bit of the sticking point. And then how do you also make sure that, you know, if you are going to put all of your eggs on X track, that we're going to go there for a long period of time, how do we also have the data and ensure that 5 or 10 or 15 years from now, whenever it is, that it's still successful, putting on a great product for our fans, people are still coming out to it, there's still interest from the industry around it. So a lot of weighing and you know, a lot of information that you really just have to disseminate to try to make the best decision.
I think everybody in the industry is excited to go to a track just outside of Des Moines, Iowa, in Newton, in Iowa. Everybody's been waiting to see if the Cup cars have ever gone. That was when Rusty Wallace built the track in, what was, 2008?
Spoken like a guy who's won there.
Yeah, so I'm definitely biased to this.
Oh, no wonder Victory Lane. You like Iowa.
It was a Cannon?
12, yeah. Won a Cannon race there, so it's always nice going to
track. We raced each other there several times.
I didn't see you.
Did he spin you out?
you're probably way out ahead of me.
Oh, my God.
Is that when I backed into you?
No, that was Gresham.
That was Gresham,
Peach State, whatever it's called now.
I'm going to come back to this podcast. It's going to be like season 27. You're going to bring that up.
Yeah.
Gresham Motorsports Park.
In practice. I think we have the in-car camera that actually. No, yep. I'm just kidding.
You probably do.
What can fans – talk about one-offs, right? You guys do have the benefit of owning that track for years now. And finally, what made this season – right to bring the big dogs to Iowa?
So, you know, we had talked about Iowa for a while. It's, again, something that we've heard from the industry and our fans of, when are you going to get back to Iowa Speedway? So, I've had the Craftsman Truck Series there and Xfinity Series there from 2009 through 2019. ARCA continues to run there as well as IndyCar. And, you know, we looked at a handful of options as we thought about that open slot. So, the open slot naturally was Auto Club. So Auto Club isn't coming back on the 24 schedule. We had the last race on 2 Mile Oval this year. So it felt like it was an opportunity for us. Hey, let's again go to a new track and a new market for us. Talked about a handful of different options. And, you know, one we kept coming back to is Iowa Speedway. You know, technically a short track. Again, it'd be good to get your opinion on this. I think in a lot of ways, from my racing experience, in ways races like a short track, in ways races like an intermediate too.
Which is this car's strength, I think.
I think so too.
The car's strength is that intermediate style. It's better in dirty air. I feel as soon as they announced it, I'm like, that's going to be a banger of a race. Track's bumpy. It's got a lot of character. It's worn out. You can be running the fence. You can run the bottom.
You think it'll be that much better than Richmond?
Yes.
Really?
More banking than Richmond.
Yeah.
A little more grip than Richmond. Bigger. It's faster.
You think the cars will spread out too?
Yeah. It'll be super wide.
Yeah.
I just think Richmond is so lacking for grip right now, and there's no banking to hold you in. You're just sliding around in the bottom lane, and there's really not a whole lot of options you can have, but Iowa's going to be a freaking blast, man.
That brings up a great point, and I guess – I don't know if you're the right one to talk to you about this or ask, but you should know, right? The packages, right? It's about, like, the car is just better on mile and a halves. And everybody's talked about the short track package or the road course package. Like, how do you want to stay away from running different packages, like aero packages, taking the diffuser off? We've heard about at short tracks. Or is it something that you want to have, like, one size fits all? Would that be easier for the teams? Or, like, how much have you dove into change in short track package, change in road course package?
So I personally haven't been super close to it. That's really John Probst and the competition team up at the R&D Center. You know, I will say we have tested out a number of different packages. I know you've been involved in some of these conversations as well. So we have some upcoming tests in December where we are playing with different packages. Everything from, you know, the aero on top of the car to, frankly, the aero underneath of the car. And, you know, it's something that you have to weigh out. And I think sometimes it's tricky because when you run it in CFD and you look at the data behind it, it looks really good over here. Sometimes you put it on the racetrack, it looks a little bit different, and it's different when you hear the feedback. So, you know, we've been playing with different things as it relates to the tires. We've been playing with different things as it relates to aero. I am interested to see how this December test goes. I think we've picked up on a few things as it relates to the tire package. I think aero is the next thing that we're really going to hone in and focus on. Something we do have to just be cognizant of is anytime you do make a change and a shift like that, it does have, you know, economic impacts to it of switching everything out. So that is something we have to weigh out. I could tell you, especially as we think about the short track and road course package, that is a priority for us. Intermediate racing has been fantastic. Short tracks and road courses, we've seen some really good races. We've seen some areas where we feel like there is improvement to be had. And I think some of these tests over the coming months will be telling for what the future could look like there.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
For me, race day is a great reason to shut down the laptop, put the phone on silent, and simply enjoy the driving. But Mobile One wants to remind you that you can get that same kind of escape any day of the week. How? By simply hopping in your car, rolling the windows down, and hitting the road. No emails, no calls, no work, just freedom. Mobile One, for the love of driving.
I thought it was cool that we changed up the playoff tracks a little bit. Starting in Atlanta, putting Watkins Glen in there. When we look at how we start and how we finish, are those fixtures? I don't think the Daytona 500 is ever going anywhere. But how set in stone is Phoenix? How do you guys feel about the finale?
Yeah, so we, and I'll back up for a minute. So when we think about these, like, so we hear from our fans, we hear from our broadcast partners, we, you know, we do studies with our teams, we do studies with our OEM partners. And we've talked about everything. So we've talked about, do you have a points race before the Daytona 500? 95% of our fans came back and said, absolutely not.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like a no thank you. It was, do not touch that. We're okay with the clash, but do not touch that.
That's great.
So I think that's, for a long time, if not ever, is always going to be the first true points race on the schedule, probably around that time of year. The championship race, you know, we've had it at Homestead in the past. I mean, you really want to rewind the clock. We've had it at Atlanta and a handful of other tracks. Recently, it's been at Phoenix. You know, I think a big part of that is just that market. You know, you look at the facility, it's a world-class facility. It looks really good. It shows up really well. It's an important market for us to be in. Could we be in a different location for the championship as we think about the future? Absolutely. You know, what the time looks like is certainly debatable. Again, we start to talk about the Farmer's Almanac and time of year and everything.
Yeah.
There's not a ton of places you can go to in November. So it really starts to limit your options, but it is something we talk about quite a bit.
We've talked about that on here a little bit. I don't think that logistically speaking, or even infrastructure, I don't think that there's more than three or four tracks that are capable of hosting. Like, the market is big enough, the market would embrace our sport big enough,
the weather's good enough.
I think there's a short list of tracks besides Homestead, like we've been there, and Phoenix. You said we finished the season at Atlanta back in the 90s. Are there any other places just off the top of your head that you could think of that are even capable of the markets that we can bring us?
So it's difficult to say. I would say the other factor in this is, and again, it would be good to get your guys' thoughts. I think I know where your head's at, is it should be on an oval, right? And probably not a plate race, probably not a road course.
Yeah.
So that starts to narrow your options a little bit. Weather starts to narrow your options a little bit. You know, we've talked about Homestead before. Do you potentially go back to Homestead and have another championship race there again? You know, I think that's something that we'll continue to debate. Outside of that, you know, that's, your options are pretty limited. So we've got some other ideas, but we still have to kick it around a bit before we land on something.
You mentioned Auto Club and that weekend that they left open, which got replaced with Iowa on June 16th. Plans were for a reconfigured short track there. Hasn't been much chatter going on that, because obviously you guys have your hands full with playoffs and schedule and all the things. Now that all that's, the big red button's been pressed, schedule's out, is there focus back on what you guys do with that that property.
Yeah, so to your point, we still have the property in Fontana right now. Trying to decide both, A, what does that track look like? How do we make sure we set it up for success from a racing product perspective? How to make sure it looks and feels like a great fan experience? And, you know, what that final track and scope looks like is TBD. We're still having a lot of conversations about that. We've been working with iRacing a ton. I can't tell you how many different iterations our design group has worked on with iRacing around that track, different banking considerations.
You've done some beta testing for that, I'm sure.
I've jumped on a couple times. Yeah.
What was your favorite rendition of a configuration so far?
So I would say, so part of it is, so the front stretch, I would say largely will look and feel the same.
Kind of rounded banked.
Kind of a round bank. In a way, similar to maybe even not a Richmond, a little bit of a D-shaped oval.
Okay. Iowa?
Kind of like Iowa.
Yeah. It's super wide, though, isn't it? Like, it's smaller. Yeah, it'd be different. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably around the same width as Iowa, I'd say. But then we played with different levels of banking. I think where we're leaning towards is a little bit, not aggressive, but a little bit of a progressive banking. So probably two or three hinges. And then a backstretch with some banking too. And then, you know, we've played around. Is it a straight backstretch? You have a little dog leg to it. What does that look like? So we've played with a handful of different ones. I think we're starting to narrow in on something. Difficult to say exactly what it's like. I characterize
over
it.
Over a half or under a half?
I'd say around a half. I would characterize it as if you blended a Martinsville, a Bristol, and maybe a little bit of a Richmond together, you'd have something similar to this.
So you say a dog leg backstretch. You ever look at the old Trenton reverse dog leg?
Back, dude, these cars would sit on the left for your stop, and you would wreck every lap.
Hey, man.
Somebody wouldn't.
Tracks
somebody
are same for everybody, buddy. Figure it out.
That's right. Figure it out. Something talking about reconfiguration or just a repave. Sonoma is laying some asphalt down on that. They told us, all the drivers in our competition meeting, all the drivers were like, ugh. But I think it was time. I mean, sure. Unfortunately, every surface runs its course. But I think that OD specifically explained to the drivers of how much different of a perspective NASCAR and SMI go into considering what kind of aggregate they used in the actual asphalt. Previously, when they would pave a track, it would just be like, what can last the next 30 years and not even worry about how it races? How much are you involved in what paving and aggregate and what the show looks like on a resurfacing anymore?
I defer mostly to the professionals on that know a lot more about the oils and aggregate and everything. I do know it's something we've looked at a lot, right? You think about our repaves over the past few years. Well, not the past few years. I would say 10 years ago, relative to some of the more recent repaves, even the aggregate that's going down has changed and evolved over time. So something we really focus on. So to your point, you do have to weigh out a little bit of longevity. Maybe we take some back, you know, of that longevity. So instead of it lasting 15 years, it lasts 10 years. But to try to create some more of that aggregate and coarseness on the surface of the racetrack. So something that we've tested out with a handful of different folks. We work with a lot of different asphalt experts, both in-house and third-party folks that will come in and look at our tracks. But I do know it's something, both as we think about patching racetracks and then complete repaves.
When you were driving, I've always kind of wondered this. Was it part of a grander plan for you as you kind of became an executive? Like, you always wanted to be able to defer back to your competition days and be like, okay, now I know what the teams are going through. I've been a driver. Or were you at the time really like, I'm going to be a race car driver. This is my path.
For me, I was solely focused on being a race car driver every single day. And I mean, you live it too. You wake up, you think about that next race. Think about the next race. How do you be as competitive as you can? How do you be as fit as you can? Mentally sharp, all of those things. I didn't have the natural talent, so I had to work a lot harder to try to eventually get there. But, you know, I'd say every day that I was a race car driver, all I focused on was that next race or the next year. And then there was a transition period from December of 17 to February of 2018 where, you know, I started to think about, hey, what does my future long-term look like? Whether that be a competitor or someone on the business side of NASCAR, I felt like 20 years from now, I was going to end up at the business side. So what better time than then, when I was 25 years old, to make that leap of faith, learn while I was young, while I was hungry, while I was passionate about the sport, and really try to get as much experience as I could.
It's funny you say that, because my husband is on the team side now and he lives with regrets. He's like, I wish I would have just tried to scrape together more money for sponsorship. Like, I wish I would have pushed a little harder to try to get to Cup and like make it happen. Have you ever second guessed that decision because you went to the business side so young?
I thought about that a lot. I did have a couple of opportunities to go Cup racing in 2018. As well as Xfinity. And
for who?
Truck.
Name names. Who was it with? Where would it? Where?
There were one or two.
Corey's like, wait, was he going to steal my ride?
Yeah.
Who was calling you?
It wasn't your ride.
Thanks.
It wasn't your ride.
Decent car?
I'd say mid.
All right.
Mid pack. Yeah. Somewhere in there. I can't remember.
Is it still a working race team?
It is.
You don't have to tell us team. Just tell us the number.
Yeah. What's the number?
You'll back into it eventually.
Yeah.
Still a race team, probably a different name today. So I had a couple of opportunities and I had to weigh it out, right?
Was it Petty's?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. It was someone else. So, I had to weigh it out. I raced for 11 years at that point. I felt like I was finally getting my feet underneath of me a little bit. You know, I had a win in Bristol and in trucks in 16. We kind of made a run for the playoffs. And then I did a bunch of races for GMS and RCR in 17. You know, had a couple of shining moments here and there. I shot myself in the foot at Road America. I'm still mad at myself to this day.
I remember that race. Yeah.
Of wheel hopping it into turn five. I'll never live that down. But, you know, there's not a day that goes by that you don't miss it. That said, I also don't have any regrets of jumping over to this side. I think you still feel that competitive nature being on this side of it. You live vicariously through people like this. And the thing that I really enjoy about it is, you know, I do feel like it can have a positive impact on both where the sport is today and where the sport can go in the future. And, you know, being able to be a part of that journey, especially over the past few years with, you know, Jim and Steve Phelps and Steve O'Donnell and the leadership group that's been put in place along with the industry around us, really makes me just optimistic and bullish for the future. So I'm excited about it. I tell people this every day. I don't think that there is a more special moment to be in NASCAR than this. You think about where we were from 10 years ago to 5 years ago, and then you think about the past 5 years, all the things that's changed from the next gen car to schedule to all the different initiatives we have, whether it's international, sustainability, DE&I. There's a lot of changes we've made and a lot of things that we're looking forward to in the future.
Three questions for you. Not the ones that I generally do. This is three questions before the three questions. All centered around Garage 56. Did you go to Le Mans?
I was at Le Mans.
Okay. Pin that. Remember that. Question number two. Could you ask Uncle Jim for the keys to drive that thing around? That thing is a nasty race car.
Oh, it was so cool. You saw it at Roval this last weekend.
Dude.
Blaney
it was running 120.
Was it Jordan Taylor that was
driving? Yeah, Blaney goes, what'd that thing run? Like, he's sitting on pit road car.
A second faster than the Cup cars, and he wasn't even going fast.
That's, yeah. What'd that thing run?
Well, he did two laps, and then he burned it down going down the front stretch. I'm like, I don't know if that was planned or not, but it looked great. It looked really cool.
That thing sounds mean, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Reach over, flip the ABS off.
Headlights look sick.
They do.
Well, you saw they clear-coated the car that actually went around Le Mans.
Oh, so the rubber and stuff's still on?
So the transmission went out. There's some fluids that came off the side of it that's still on there. All the rubber marks are still on it.
That's cool.
It's really cool. It's super special.
Three. So do you think Uncle Jim will let you drive that car one day?
I haven't asked them, but maybe.
I think you should.
Yeah.
Where Corey wants to come with you if you're allowed to,
I'll
apparently.
I'll ride the right side, like Jocko Flacco.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Where would you want to drive it if you could drive it?
A Daytona would be really cool.
The road course?
Yeah.
That would be sick.
I think that'd be really, really cool.
And you wouldn't have to drive very far from your house either.
Yeah.
No, easy drive. So, I've never done a true lap around the road course at Daytona either, so that'd be special.
That would be a sick car to do it in. So back to the first question. Growing up, legitimately born into the sport, you've seen the sport evolve so many different times over 75 years in your young age. How proud did you feel just to be a part of that and to see how far NASCAR's come to bring a car to Le Mans?
I was incredibly proud. I know it was an important project and initiative for Jim. There's some history and some family legacy of my grandfather and great grandfather trying to bring race cars to Le Mans. So to be able to do that was so special. And to be there and, you know, see him and Rick and the entire group that put so much energy and time into that vehicle, the preparation behind it. If you think about it, you only have one shot at this, yeah. One shot at 24 hours. And if you mess up, if you wreck the car, if you have an engine failure that's terminal, you know, you're done and there's no going back after that. And the spotlight was on us for sure. So to be able to perform and execute under the limelight like that was incredible. And then to see the smile on their faces was really special. You know, I remember being there, first of all, walking down the grid before the race and seeing all the different prototypes and GTs, which I just geek out over that. I think those cars are so cool. But then I was walking down and there was like this mob of people. And I'm like, is there a celebrity here? Like what's going on? And then it was a Garage 56 car that was sitting in the middle of it. And people were just so enamored by the car. So that was one of the coolest moments. And then I would say the other just really neat moment. And I have a video on my phone of all the cars going by is you hear all the prototypes going by. So you had the prototypes, you had us, and then you had the GT cars after us. So hear all the prototypes go by. And then the NASCAR G50, oh my gosh, the V8 just go, and it just echoes. And it was, man, it really made you proud. It made you feel like you're back at home for a minute.
I thought everything from top to bottom, that whole thing made me proud to be just a participant and a competitor in the sport. I know Ryan and I spent a lot of time talking about it. Everything was just buttoned up, and you guys represented us well there for sure. Question number three. What sort of phone calls or conversations with international markets did that open up just from that alone?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, first of all, it did show a lot of interest from some of our international series that we have today. So we have series in Canada, Mexico, Europe, and then Brazil. I was actually at the Drive for Diversity reception for our combine that's happening today and tomorrow. I met with some of the Brazil folks as their first year, and they're just so excited about it. So first of all, it's really great to see the different series that we have around the world that's racing. And I would say there was a lot of interest that came from that. So I went to an event in London about a week after where we had a lot of our series come to, a lot of our track partners from those series, and a lot of just, you know, overall partners in the sport and some fans. And it was so neat to see everyone talk about Garage 56. So yes. And then I would say secondly, you know, there are a lot of people that have reached out interested in a national series event, a cup series event going internationally, following that as well.
Is that why there was murmurs of us going to London Street Course? Cause they saw you probably walking around the street to London.
Paparazzi catches Ben Kennedy.
I'm afraid to like post anything yeah. now because I'll like, yeah. I think I went to Switzerland.
Yep, racing at the Colosseum in Rome. Yeah. Set up some safer barriers.
I went to Switzerland for a couple of days on a trip and then people started, we're going street racing in Switzerland. I'm
on vacation
for 3 days. Like, it sounds really cool. I love it, but a
little bit unpractical.
Yeah, a little bit unpractical.
You're that guy now, though. That responsibility is on you.
He's yeah. Mr. Schedule now. Yeah. We talked about
That's
it.
That's probably why I don't post much anymore. But
are we filming like Talladega Nights? Normally, if there's a different car on the track, it's because we're filming a movie. What was Jordan doing out there the other day?
Letting it rip.
He was. He did a couple hot laps and then, yeah.
I think it was just right down the street over at Hendrick and they just drove that thing over to the track.
Yeah.
Okay. So no co-op, no secret mission. There was just having fun.
Not yeah. that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Honestly, I didn't know it was happening.
Yeah. I didn't either.
Yeah. I was walking down pit road. That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I like
yeah.
scrambling. I put my knee pads. I'm like, wait, yeah. did I miss something?
yeah.
Are we racing?
yeah.
I mean, any other questions before I get into the three questions? Because after that,
I could sit here all day and ask questions. I'm stuck on the fact that you're working with iRacing on developing new tracks. So, like, that opens up my whole brain to be like, okay, who's driving the cars? Are you having simulator races? And then are you able to use that for what we talked about earlier as far as packages?
Sure.
Like, is that something that you work with?
So I haven't been super close to the packages. And I would say, first of all, iRacing has been a tremendous partner from a scheduling standpoint. So I'd say the the two best use cases that we've had, right, is the LA Coliseum in Chicago. So start with the Coliseum because chronologically that happened first. And we had no idea. I mean, we had never done anything like that before. We had never created a temporary Cup Series racetrack inside of a 100-year-old stadium like that. Steve Myers and the entire group has been fantastic over there. So whether
we got to see that the other day because they came to his seat shop and scanned my street stock.
Oh, really?
Kevin Iannarelli. So we got to see kind of how that works. And
yeah,
we picked his brain quite a bit. He was picking Corey's brain quite a bit too about how's the simulator work? What do you think about the scans?
Yeah.
How close is it?
We just announced the console.
I was going to ask you about that because that's what we're missing, man. I feel like we've been missing that Xbox.
It's a huge opportunity.
For sure. What's that look like, you think?
I talked with him for a while at the track on Sunday about, you know, what that's going to look like. And, you know, their focus is making, you know, first and foremost, making a game that races really well, whether you have a wheel and pedals or you have a controller. So what they talked about is, you know, all the testing they're going to do, first and foremost with the controller. It's a lot of people play with the controller.
Yep.
And then a wheel and pedals. But I'm excited about what they're doing, the vision that they have for the game, all the tracks and content that's going to be in there. I think it's going to be so special. So I know it's going to be a while before you actually see it hit the shelves, but it's going to be an amazing product once it comes out.
Man, I think it just gets NASCAR in front of so many kids who might not ever get the chance to go to a race, but they can sit there and race a car. And it just like no different. They go outside and shoot a basketball and think they're LeBron James. They can go outside or inside and race car and think they're Bubba Wallace, right? I think it unlocks so many doors.
But back to scans, like you touched on the Coliseum and Chicago, how much iRacing's helped you with that?
So the Coliseum, so we had never done anything like that before, right? 100 years, you know, the Coliseum was celebrating their 100-year anniversary. We had never built a temporary track inside of any stadium, but let alone that stadium that was so special and so iconic. And it's a big endeavor, right? You got to build a temporary track, and you know that was all completely foreign to us. So we went to iRacing, and we had worked on a number of different CAD models for what the track could look like. We sent it back and forth with them. They eventually created the virtual racetrack, essentially, in iRacing, and began to test it with our professional esports drivers. We did have a couple of Cup drivers jump on there as well. And the tricky part about that is, so you maximize the footprint. The only variable you really have to play with is banking. So we played with different variations of the banking, and something that was actually interesting. So we eventually narrowed it down to a 5-degree banking and then a 2.5-degree banking. And we did mock races with our esports drivers. We'd let them run for 20 laps. We'd throw a caution. We'd let them run for 15. We'd, you know, reshuffle the field, have them run again. And the racing looked pretty similar from 5 degrees to 2.5 degrees. But what was really cool about that, and I didn't even think of this when we came into it. So they built this track first virtually, and then they built the Coliseum around it. We eventually got to a point where we could place a virtual camera anywhere in that stadium. So you could put it up on top of the 1923 club at the highest place. You could put it on the very first row, which was the 14th row, because we had a portion of it blocked off to watch the race from there. So as these drivers are racing around the track, we tried to find the most challenging seat in the house from a sightline perspective. And that happened to be the center of 3 and 4 in the very first row. And watch a race with a 5-degree, you couldn't see the racetrack at all. We watch it with a 2.5-degree, and you could see the entire racetrack.
That's wild.
And after seeing the racing product be identical to each other, we said, let's go with 2.5 degrees.
Modern technology, man.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So that was really cool. And then iRacing, this was several years ago, and early on when we were working on that project, we sent a street scanner. So if you ever watched the movie Twister before, kind of similar to that, have a pickup truck with a big scanner in the back. Monday night at about midnight, they went around, laser scanned the city streets. They sent a photographer out there, took hundreds of thousands of pictures, and then created this virtual street course. And same thing, we played with a ton of different variations, different streets, different lengths. We ran it clockwise, we ran it counterclockwise, we moved pit road, and then ultimately landed on that. So iRacing has been a phenomenal partner from that standpoint, and it helps us prove out, you know, what these races could potentially look like in the real world before we even put a shovel in the ground in LA or we build temporary walls and fences in Chicago.
Yeah, that can save millions and millions.
And what it's done to Steve's business. I mean, it grew his business exponentially. I've talked to Steve Swift, and they're all in.
Yes.
Like, the partners that they've become with you guys, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Corey said his simulator, like, never been to the track. You guys were, what, within 0.3?
Dude, the GM simulator was spot on. It was unbelievable how close they get that thing for not even knowing anything about that street course. But I wanted to ask you about that street course specifically. I thought, obviously, whether Mother Nature did not cooperate with us. Still, all things considered, Julie and her team knocked out of the park. There was some logistic things that you guys can probably wrinkle out and make things a little more easily accessible for fans. But what are some things that are on the short list of improvements or additions for the Chicago street course next year?
I would say, first of all, weather.
Yeah.
What's the Farmer's Almanac saying?
What's the almanac say for that? Dude, it downpoured.
I've never seen it rain so hard.
I don't think people in Chicago have ever seen that. Wait, it was a record.
Was there any truth to them being able to drain, like, the drains, the way they rotate the river to suck the water out of there? You know how these stories turn up in the garage. They were like, yeah, they can change the flow of the river to get the water off the track. That's why right away, like, it didn't flood. It was...
I don't know.
It drained pretty quickly, but...
I do know they were going around with a knife, so they had banners on the wall, and then you have kind of little openings where the forklift can pick it up. So we had to cut that out so that the water could start to drain because you had it pooling up in a bunch of areas. And we had these giant vacuum trucks everywhere. We were doing everything that we could to get the race in on Sunday. So first and foremost, weather. There were a lot of things from an event experience standpoint that we weren't able to do. So we had the chain smokers planned for Saturday night. We had a ton of things planned on Sunday leading into the event. So I was disappointed we weren't able to deliver that this year. So hopefully from a weather standpoint, we're able to see that through. And then, you know, we're just working on overall what the site plan looks like. So, you know, where do we have our temporary grandstands, suites, hospitality areas? Some of that's going to look a little bit different, just based off of what we've seen from a demand perspective. But there are a lot of things that we weren't able to do because of weather this year. So knock on wood, chair, wherever that is, July 6th and 7th next year, the weather is going to be spectacular in Chicago.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Which one was more stressful, the Coliseum or the street course? Which one took more years off your life?
I would say, in a way, and it was probably Julie, because Julie... it was living and breathing this every single day. Chicago, because, you know, everything around that event was completely temporary. If you think about the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum, we'd never done anything like that before. You had the grandstands, you had the suites, you had the infrastructure. They've had Super Bowls there before. You had all the fiber going to the broadcast compound. So think about a lot of the needs and requirements. It was a perfect venue for us. For Chicago, we had to go into a park and create this temporary racetrack that has all of the back end and infrastructure that goes into putting on a race, but pouring the temporary walls, the fencing, the grandstands, hospitality areas, stages, suites, activation areas, all of that had to be been thought through and planned. Road closures, park closures, openings. There was a huge logistical process that happened from that standpoint. And it was, you know, our design development team and Julie Giese and the team working on the ground, but then also all of our vendors and suppliers making sure that they're showing up at the right time, everything's scheduled and on plan. And, you know, you have a couple of curveballs that come 24 and 48 hours before you're supposed to open the gates on Saturday. And you have to be ready to adjust along the way too, which we did.
Which happened,
with a lot of the weather. So, you know, I would say Chicago, but again, you know, I give a ton of credit to Julie Giese and the team in Chicago. They really led that from the forefront.
So now that the schedule's out, what does Ben Kennedy's now calendar look like for the next days, weeks, months? I'm wondering if there's parts of your job, because we joke you're Mr. Schedule, but I know you do a lot more than that.
Yeah, so everyone asks me, like, what do you do every day? I would love to tell you that it is this every single day. It ebbs and flows, right? So schedule has been, you know, I'd say probably 75% of the past couple of months. It's probably still going to be 50% for the next few months because we're already thinking about 25 and 26 and 27 and long-term road mapping for the future of the schedule, especially as we go into our new media rights contracts. So that's a large part of it. I'd say a lesser known fact about what I do, I'm also on the weekly and touring team. So brought in Joey Denowitz, who has been around the teams in a number of different capacities, could come head up weekly and touring. So everything from our Advanced Auto Parts weekly series to the Whelen Modified series, and really starting to think about what does a ladder system for the future drivers of our sport look like. And then I would say outside of that, there are a handful of different ad hoc projects and initiatives that I get looped into along the way. So, you know, media rights, industry conversations, there's potential mergers and acquisitions of tracks, you know, interested in, hey, let's do an event here. Or do you want to have a conversation about this? Do you want to have an event over here? So there's always different random things that come up. So, you know, that part ebbs from 5% of my time to 50% of the time too. So just a lot of exciting projects and initiatives that we're always working on.
Well, we're in good hands, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes,
this guy's got it figured out. I'm excited that he knows the competition side. He also knows the business side, and he's taken us into the future, and he's also taken us through these next three questions.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
First question is, it's generally one car, one track, but you've been on the show before. I don't recall your answer, one car, one track for the rest of your life? But if you had to pick one, what do you go with?
Next gen car.
Okay.
I haven't driven it before. Maybe the G56 car, actually.
I like that.
Let's go with that.
Tee you up for that.
Daytona Road Course.
There you go. You already answered earlier in the show. Yeah. I'm going to change the question for you as well. If you had to pick one type of track and one market
that we could go and race at?
Yep.
I think we talked about this one before too. So I would go short track.
Yep.
And I think we said somewhere in the islands, like a track on an island somewhere.
That's right.
Tropical location. Blue water in the back. I think that
I told
would be
you
cool.
Mine is, I asked him this before. I'm like, can we like roll it back to the late 40s? Can we race on the beaches?
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had to go with one car, I mean, that would be so cool.
Did I hear that there was conversations about potentially doing that?
I don't think there have been super legitimate conversations about doing that. I mean, we spitball everything. We've talked about that before. I'm not going to lie. You know, a lot of challenges you'd have around that.
Something about the turtles, right? They don't want to like wake up the turtles because the cars are too loud anymore.
That might be some of it.
That's what I heard.
There's some other things that we would have
like
to work through. Sand is a variable. Actually, so
he's like, you guys are morons. Yes.
He knew what he was getting into.
Well, I think the other part, which, you know, it'd be good to get your perspective on this, is 2 miles in one direction, and then you make a U-turn, and then it's 2 miles in another direction. You're moving pretty
Seems
quick.
Seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah. You're moving pretty quick at the end of 2 miles.
Let's do it.
You'd be flying.
Get a hot dog at the North Turn Grill, turn around, come back the other way.
It was pretty neat a few years ago. So I had the opportunity to go down there, and they have this car show. I want to say it's around Speed Weeks every year, but they bring out a lot of cars that actually raced on the beach back in the day. And I had the opportunity to drive one of those cars with, I think it was the second generation of someone that raced on the beach. And it's so cool because you go down there, they have all the cars lined up. They do a flyover and a national anthem. And then you do one ceremonial lap around the Daytona Beach course. So the North Turn, the South Turn, down A1A, coming back down the beach. It was really neat and really special. So that might actually be my one track and one market.
That'd be pretty cool.
100th anniversary. I'm just saying we can work towards it.
We have 24 years away.
24 years to start working on it.
Question number two. I remember your answer from the first time earlier this year. We were honest. What's the most embarrassed you've been at the racetrack? You said it was when you backed over my hood in practice. But if you had to, I just want to envision this moment. And I think everybody's had one where they've had like the Mike Helton handshake, like, that's not how we do it around here, son, type of conversation. Do you ever have a Mike Helton moment?
When I was a driver?
Good or bad or indifferent as a, no, or as a driver or as,
like, is, know, he Mike Helton or somebody?
You're asking if he's ever gotten an ass chewing. Is
more
what
or less.
Is what you're
you
asking.
Ever gotten a Mike Helton
ever
ass
called
chewing?
Into the NASCAR hauler?
not for Mike. I don't think I was called into the NASCAR hauler, but we went into the NASCAR hauler one time when I was truck racing to debate a position after a restart. And it was me and my crew chief at the time. I want to say it was 2015 or 2016. And we went in there and we had our position, and there was a rebuttal to that position. And we zipped our lips and walked out of there afterwards. So I had never had a NASCAR hauler experience.
From Mike?
It wasn't from Mike. Okay. It was from someone else from the competition department.
I'm trying to think who series director.
Not Wayne. Wayne's Xfinity, right? Wayne Alton.
He might have been. Yeah. No, he was.
It wasn't him. I'm not sure who it was, but I remember going in there and we were so confident and we walked away and we had our tail between our legs after that. So that was my my NASCAR hauler experience at Phoenix. I remember it very vividly.
Like, he is NASCAR. That's, and NASCAR's telling him he's not getting the position.
He was a competitor at the time, so yeah.
Wow.
Hey, everybody gets it no matter who you are.
Yeah.
Question number three. If you had to lose... Hang on, play some tape. We've got some tape of one of your favorite driving NASCAR memories.
Oh, dear.
Not this one. This is me wrecking somebody at the Roval.
I'm nervous now. We can
Here
watch.
Here we go.
Oh.
Okay.
Bowman Gray.
Ben, explain the year. Which car are you?
I 96. Am the 96 okay. GL car with the giant. Oh, yep.
Get There's in there.
Brett.
Going
give,
inside.
Who's in the 11?
Brett.
Brett Moffitt.
Oh, he gave you way too much room.
Yeah. I think he had some issues.
How many laps to go is this?
Maybe 25.
Oh, he wins it.
And they yelled at you for not.
Wow.
They were mad at me for doing
burnouts in the grass.
In the grass in the 50-yard line. But I was like, I'm sorry. I don't care. Like, I've
we'll
won saw, at
we'll
Bowman
sod this
Gray
thing
Stadium.
When I leave. Bill me. Yeah. That's a big dub.
That was neat. That was my second ARCA East win back
that
in
13?
The day. That was 2013.
Yep.
You ever hear the
story? Were you in that race? had you graduated after that?
I had graduated to ARCA, but I got a call for this week by Jeff Spraker, the guy who's at ARCA car drove a couple weeks ago at Watkins Glen. And we went from winning the year before to we were top of the sheet all day in practice if you flip it upside down. We were dead last. Terrible.
In the race?
In practice, in the race, qualified like second to last.
Oh, no.
So down the backstretch, first lap, they all stack up into three, like pop, 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 accordion. I ram the guy in front of me so hard, the hood folds up, and I just turn right at the same time I ran the guy behind me and drove right off the racetrack and got out with my suit, walked to my car, and drove home.
Speaking of Ash Jones, the year before when he won his first Can-Am race there, he – went to go turn the infielder, and before they repaved it, there was that big crevice, and it knocked the nose off of it, and that's all he got in victory lane was,
I didn't get a
wreck
job.
The car!
I remember that.
I didn't
remember
get a good
that
job,
now.
Nothing. Yep. Just dog cuss.
Randy.
You were in the white and in black 07.
Yep.
I remember that very vividly.
Thought I was good.
You know why Ben didn't know if you were in it or not?
Because he was too busy winning.
He never saw you.
No, I never saw me because I was in the garage. I was when he was taking that picture from Victory Lane, I was about pulling into my driveway. So that is one of your obviously great driving memories. You have so many made in the sport. But if you had to keep one racing memory in the car or out of the car and forget all the others, if I had a Men in Black pen and hit the button and zapped your brain, you only had one memory left, what do you keep?
I'd have to go with the truck win at Bristol. You know, as a fan going there, growing up, and just seeing the size and scale of the last great Coliseum. I mean, it's overwhelming. But then to watch races there and then to participate in races was a whole different thing. I couldn't have imagined in my wildest dreams what it was like going to Victory Lane there to be able to win at Bristol Motor Speedway against some of the best drivers in the truck series at that time was really, really special. And like, you know, as a driver, you always dream about winning and going to victory lane. To be able to win at that track, you know, do a donut, do a burnout, all that stuff. But then to go up on top of, I think it's on top of the media center, one of the buildings there, where they have victory lane and get out, that just is so special. So I want to win so bad in the truck series.
Did they give you a sword?
They didn't give me a sword. No.
That was pre-sword days.
It was pre-sword days. I did get my, I think my right rear tire. So my crew chief got my right front, which has about an inch and a half of cords on it. Oh. We're 120 laps. So I think half of the field came down with 70 or 80 to go, took two or four tires.
And you held on.
We took two tires with 120 to go, and there's like 2 inches of cords on the right front tire. The right rear tire, the cords just completely ripped out of it.
Did you do a burnout up the ramp?
I did do a little burnout up the ramp. I was timid about it, though, because I'm like, I don't want to
launch that thing off the other side.
Yeah, that'd be bad. Off of there. Yeah. Yeah.
You got to get your money's worth, man.
Yeah. It's a little burnout.
That's a good memory to keep.
You've been so gracious with your time. I know you've been a busy guy, but thank you for coming in here.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Explaining about all your hard work you guys and the team put together for our next year's schedule and beyond. I'm looking forward to see what the future of NASCAR holds. Keep up the good work, buddy.
Vice versa. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.